Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the BRC's Trade Policy Podcast. The UK government has launched its communications campaign for the end of the transition period on the 31st of December, so companies have to upscale their preparations. There have been further meetings around the protocol on Ireland and Northern Ireland as the 1st of January deadline approaches there, and the UK's other trade negotiations have been continuing apace. So today's podcast theme is getting ready to go, but where? I'm William Madison in London, and as ever, I'm joined by the BRC's trade policy advisor, William Bain from Glasgow. William, how are you going?
Hello there. Good to speak with you.
And also joined by the director of the Northern Ireland Retail Consortium, Aidan Connolly. Aidan, how are you?
Deeply depressed, but thank you for asking nonetheless.
Lovely. So William, turning to you first, we've said for a while that the September-October period is the crucial time in terms of reaching a UK-EU trade deal. But do you think there's some crucial refining of positions on either side that still needs to happen before then?
Yes, absolutely. It was really interesting to see some of the statements at the end of last week from both Team Barnier and Team Frost on either side. And I think it's clear that the EU is preparing to make some moves on areas such as fisheries and state aid, which are the two biggest impediments to a deal and getting a zero tariff deal, which is what retailers want and need. This is not something that can be done sort of overnight. I mean, it's somewhat different from the some of the earlier negotiations we had around what was the backstop and then the Northern Ireland Protocol. Really, if there is going to be the kind of arrangement on state aid that deals with both sides' red lines, so that means no role for the European Court of Justice on the UK side, but nevertheless, clarity and not having the UK undercut a sort of common production model from the EU's perspective, then everything's going to have to be written down in the trade agreement. And there is no precedent for having the kind of voluminous detail there is going to have to be on common rules and standards and principles on state aid. So it's going to have to be done from scratch. And I think the sense in Brussels is that this will take some time. So there needs to be an indication either by the end of this month or at the very latest in the mid-August negotiating round, which is going to happen, that the UK will show some leg in a sense in following the overtures which have been made by Michel Barnier. Now, Michel Barnier has still got to square the member states. That's the other thing. He is the instrument of the member states who still might want a really expansive deal on fisheries protecting existing rights and entitlements, but that's unlikely to happen. So he has a lot of work himself to do to square opinion on the EU side, but there needs to be a sense from London that they're willing to make the kind of conciliatory moves from their own side that gets us over the line for a deal by October. So there's a lot to be done. And yes, the September-October time is going to be critical for applying that political touch on the tiller, as it were, just as it was before these previous agreements, most notably in October 2019. But a lot of the work has to be done over the summer, and that's why there needs to be some leg shown from London over the next few weeks.
So do you still think that the end of October is a firm deadline for an agreement to be ratified in time?
Yes, well, as the transition period has not been extended and there is no legal or any other basis to extend the negotiating time, really there has to be an agreement by mid-October to allow for a couple of weeks of legal scrubbing of the text. There needs to be an agreed text by the end of October in order to allow for ratification at Westminster. That would be quite straightforward. Wouldn't require primary legislation, an Act of Parliament. It would just the treaty would be laid before Parliament for a certain number of days. But in the European institutions, of course, the European Parliament will need to have its committee reports and a plenary vote, which we think will be towards the end of December, maybe around the 20th of December. So the process there is, you know, perhaps a bit more onerous. And of course, the European Parliament has said it will not ratify a deal that doesn't have a level playing field within it. So, you know, there are red lines coming, not just from the member states, not just from the UK task force and the commission, but from the European Parliament too. So these timelines are pretty set in aspic, and they need to be complied with if we're going to have a deal in time.
So the existing trade agreements through the EU matter a lot to UK retailers. How's the rollover program for those agreements going?
Well, broadly, it looks as if the UK has rolled over half of its existing free trade agreements through the EU with other partners. So obviously, we're aware of South Africa customs union agreement being rolled over, which is important. South Korea. But there are some big omissions, glaring omissions even at this stage. So, for example, Mexico and Chile, from which UK retail imports quite a lot of fruit and nuts, they are not rolled over as yet. So they are significant omissions. Also, some of the other deals. So the deal with Norway, I mean, a lot of our fish actually comes from Norway. And with that, the deal was rolled over, but only for sort of no deal circumstances in 2019. So that needs to be revisited in time for the 1st of January. And some of these other agreements may require a sort of little tweak as well, depending on what's agreed on the implementation of the protocol on Ireland, Northern Ireland. So there's a lot to be done there too. Canada is another country with whom the rollover has proved much more difficult than some people expected. So this was said by the former Trade Secretary, Liam Fox, now a candidate for Director General of the World Trade Organization, as an easy process, but it's proven to be a lot more time consuming and difficult than was believed at the very start. So there's a lot of work to be done in the next 6 months.
So turning to other agreements, do you think we're likely to get an outcome on the UK-Japan or the UK-US agreement by the end of the year?
On the first, yes. The timelines have shifted somewhat. Originally, Japan was clear it wanted the negotiations to finish by the end of July in order to get any agreement ratified. It's important to bear in mind that this agreement will largely be based on the current agreement that's in force between the UK through the EU and Japan in the Economic Partnership Agreement, which came into force in 2018. The UK would like some additions. It would like maybe some rules of origin that are a bit more applicable to a UK-only market. It would like more on the digital side and promoting e-commerce. But Japan is playing hardball in terms of things like agri-food provisions and subsidies and tariffs. So it looks like things might drag into the middle of August. But again, Japan has got very onerous ratification requirements in comparison with the UK Parliament. And things can't really sort of go on much beyond the middle of August if the deal is going to be done and in place for both sides by the 1st of January. So we've got a fraught 4 weeks coming up in terms of the Japan negotiations, but it'll probably get there. In terms of UK-US, it's, I think, at a fascinating stage. I mean, the US has yet to make its sort of market access offer, you know, getting to the nuts and bolts of what goods and services would be allowed in and on what terms. And obviously the UK would have to reciprocate. There's an immense amount of work going on at a technical level by officials on both sides. Enormous amounts of text for each of the different chapters going down. But I think the key issue is lack of time between now and the US election on November the 4th. It's likely there might be some kind of mini agreement, some kind of in principle agreement in certain areas, particularly around SMEs. But it looks very unlikely that a full free trade agreement can be done in time for the election. And of course, if one looks at the polls at the moment, stateside, it's looking likely that there will be a change of administration. And that could introduce some delays into the negotiating process. There might be a new US trade representative put in place to look after this negotiation, as well as other important aspects of US trade policy. So the process might have to be extended beyond the end of this year. And it was interesting that Liz Truss, the Trade Secretary, said recently she'd rather wait for a good deal than do a bad deal in a hurry. Where have we heard that line before, of course? So I think we're going to have to wait into next year. And if there is a new administration, it might have some different priorities in terms of trade policy, still likely to want to continue the negotiations and secure an FTA, but it might be done over a slightly longer timescale.
So also, as I touched on at the beginning of the show, we've seen the launch of the UK's government comms, the campaign to get business, consumers and others ready for the 1st of January. I saw retail got a specific mention in the video accompanying it. What are some of the key aspects companies should be looking out for? Is there anything missing from the EU-Great Britain border arrangement, I should say? Is there anything there that we should be watching out for?
Well, the most important thing, I think, for business to start to get minds around is it took years for British business to prepare to join the single market. One remembers the sort of comms campaigns, you know, many months, almost years in duration, about preparing to go in. And of course, GB business is coming out of the single market and the customs union and the VAT area within 6 months. And we know this is happening for definite. So it's very clear that you know, there's going to be no extensions, no Hail Mary pass to change things at the last minute. Really profound changes are coming for the way that goods enter and leave the GB border, and companies have to be ready for it. So there were kind of five key asks which the UK government put down for companies this week, around having customs intermediaries, around having a duty deferment account in case there's any customs duties or import VAT eventually to be paid, you know, ensuring that they have an EORI number. So these are the basic things which companies have to do and do them very quickly. But there's a whole plethora of other questions. So, you know, for example, how do you get cheeses and meats across from Germany into Great Britain after the 1st of January, when seamless, frictionless trade becomes a thing of memory and not a reality of the now? And some of those questions were answered in the document. It's a very long paper, 206 pages, but it provides necessary clarity, but doesn't answer every single question as yet. It doesn't deal with the Northern Ireland border arrangements. It's also, I think, missing some detail about databases, which companies will have to liaise with and operate. But we're promised that detail will come. I suppose the two biggest concerns are these. Are the ports going to be ready in terms of being able to handle 24/7 movements of products in from the EU, particularly perishable products, you know, fish or fruits or vegetables coming through early in the morning to be put on the shelves in the UK later that day? And the other issue is, what will happen in terms of goods leaving, particularly Dover and Eurotunnel, going to the European Union? If documents are in an unready state or incomplete, where is going to be the facility in any queue of lorries for those errors to be corrected? Without the haulier losing the place in the queue that they have? And how are we going to manage any queues which result from all of this? You know, the important thing about Dover and Eurotunnel is you know, there's the inbound flow and the outbound flow, and both affect the other. They operate in a synchronous way. And if we do get delays for outbound goods leaving Great Britain, that does present the concern that things might not be all right on the night, on the 1st of January, even given some of the temporary easements and phase-ins that the UK government has made around inbound movements into GB, particularly around food products running until the 1st of July next year. So some clarity, more needed, but some concerns remain.
So the UK government has launched a consultation on its internal market bill. What's the significance of this, and why does it matter so much?
This is a really important measure. I mean, in a sense, a good deal of what the EU was doing in terms of the devolution settlements was like hidden wiring under the floorboards. No one really needed to know it was there. You certainly didn't need to inquire as to how it worked. But it was important in terms of ensuring that a common UK market within a common European market functioned. Now, as some of those functions which the Commission did through this hidden wiring are repatriated to London, you then have the question about what happens to them. And in terms of the devolution settlements as presently written, you know, those powers might have flowed directly to the devolved administrations. But then someone somewhere has to hold, you know, the sort of the terms of reference about a common UK market. This measure is going to be acutely controversial, particularly in Scotland. But really, there are two things that the UK government are trying to do. First, to introduce a principle of mutual recognition, one which we recognise, of course, from the EU single market. And it really works like this, that goods which are lawfully traded in one part of the UK internal market should be able to be traded in any other part of the UK internal market, i.e. Scotland, Wales or Northern Ireland. Now, the problem with the document, lengthy though it is it doesn't actually deal with the Northern Ireland situation. And if we look at the protocol, for example, you know, genetically modified organisms in food and products of animal origin that are not tying in with EU food standards and food rules would not be able to circulate in Northern Ireland. So the document kind of does not deal with that, but that is the reality of how the protocol will operate. But what I think the mutual recognition principle could do is allow products which are made in Northern Ireland in accordance with EU rules to circulate in the other three component parts of the United Kingdom. So it sort of adds into this unfettered access which the Prime Minister and other cabinet ministers have promised to businesses in Northern Ireland in relation to the Great Britain market and access to that without restriction. But of course, what it could also mean is that, you know, products imported from other countries, perhaps made to different standards than those which the UK as a whole accepts at the moment, could circulate in Scotland or Wales. And particularly in Scotland, this is a very, very controversial point politically. So this is going to take a lot of very careful handling, this legislation. But I think the important element is it does have a lot of parallels with the mutual recognition approach within the EU single market. It's just that came from EU rules and EU norms, whereas this situation is now going to have to be dealt with by a UK statute and very fractious intra-governmental relations within the UK. The other thing the bill does is to introduce a non-discrimination principle, which is to say that companies should be able to trade in all four parts of the UK without having any discrimination from the application of rules. So the government's launched this consultation, goes on to the 13th of August. Very, very important if you're selling food or toys or any other type of good or service. But the politics of this are going to be toxic and could well dominate the autumn and even the run-up to the devolved elections in Scotland and Wales next year.
So, Aidan, turning to you now, the Specialised Committee met this week in terms of discussing how to implement the Northern Ireland-Great Britain arrangements. How are things going on that front for businesses?
Absolutely terrible. We're in the dark. We're really no further on than we were the last time. We have seen that GBD, UEU, GB has had a lot more detail, which has come out from both the British government and the notices that came from the EU. So people are starting to get used to the realities. Now, those realities could change if there is an FTA, free trade agreement. I've been pointed out that I use too many acronyms and therefore have to explain them. It's a VIP. That's very important. on a more serious note, as far as Northern Ireland's concerned, we won't get any of that sort of detail until my sources tell me around the 26th of July. And the thing is, though, the detail that we get won't be everything that we need, because there are still needs to be those adjudications from the Joint Committee, which will be informed by the work of the Specialised Committee. Now, in this past couple of days, I have had telephone calls with the EU, with the British government, with the Irish government, and with the Northern Ireland executive members of the committee. And there is a real sense of people trying to move on this. People realise, especially when it comes to Northern Ireland households, that they simply can't afford the cost rises that would come with friction. And we're talking about frictions here that we've never had before. We're talking about frictions on SPS, that's sanitary and phytosanitary. See, William, I'm doing what I'm doing. Which is basically checks on products of animal origin or plant origin. And that's really important to the EU. Because they want to protect the single market and the standards from their consumers. But there's also, as William said, there's also questions about VAT. There's questions about safety and security. There's questions about transit. Now, the English government, the Westminster government, has said, and HMRC are working to beta test a system called GVMS, the Goods Vehicle Movement System, or scheme. And that would allow people from GB, our members, big retailers, who are going to send stuff over to Northern Ireland to put in several different numbers, their safety and security number, their export declaration, and their transit number, and get one number, which is their GMR, which is their Good Movement Reference. And that's all that the haulier needs to carry with them. Now, that may seem like it is simplifying things. However, all you're doing is moving the administrative bottleneck. We still need systems to put that in place. We still need man hours to feed those in to get that one number. And it doesn't deal with VAT and those checks on products of animal origin. So we haven't been sitting on our laurels or wringing our hands. We've actually been quite productive. And what we have been looking at is a way to try and get around that. Now, what we want is for the EU to concede the principle that Northern Ireland is different and that we can work out a scheme. Trusted trader, what some people are calling it, that's not exactly what it is, but it's more of a certified supply chain, if you will. A certified auditable supply chain, if you will, which basically means that because of the evidence that we provide the EU can know that what's going to Northern Ireland, both on the food side and the VAT side and the tariff side, is going to a dead-end host, meaning that that will only be used in Northern Ireland. And that's what we're asking for. Now, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. I think both sides will need to move. There needs to be an ambition from the UK government to ask for it. There needs to be a reciprocation by the EU, and that reciprocation comes in the form of not only a bit of trust, but also a generosity of spirit to allow that mitigation to take place, because it will need a derogation and movement from those union custom code rules. All to play for so far. We look forward to seeing what the baseline assumption will be, and that's those baseline things will be coming out, like I said, somewhere around the 26th of July. However, for our members and for Northern Ireland households, we will continue to lobby to talk and to scream from the rooftops about the need for these mitigations to remove friction, because quite simply, without them, there's going to be some big cost rises and none of us want to see that.
So when can we expect more clarity on the Northern Ireland border?
Well, there's, as I said, there's some more information that is coming out on the 26th of July. But a lot of this is dependent on whether or not there's an FTA, that's a free trade agreement, with the EU that can maybe, if we don't get a free trade agreement, you're talking about a brick wall down the Irish Sea for all intents and purposes. Metaphorically, of course, we're not actually going to build a brick wall, you know. I don't think the UK government would even pay for it. But it will make things a lot harder. So if we get an FTA, some of that can remove that friction. The thing is, even on this stuff that we're talking about here, as far as trusted trader, green channel, certified supply chain, or any other mitigations that flow from these discussions, both in the specialised committee and the joint committee, still going to take time. Now, again, a lot of this is going to be in the semantics' name. Some people are calling it an adjustment period. Some people are calling it an implementation period. Some people are calling it an extension to the transition period. We don't care whether you call it the large fluffy bunny period. What we do care about is the fact that all this is going to need time to implement. What we're really talking about here is a fundamental change in how Northern Ireland does business with Great Britain and how Great Britain does business with Northern Ireland. If we are, and our main concern has always been, if we are to continue to give households in Northern Ireland the affordability and the choice that they need and that they're used to, then we're going to need those mitigations. Quite simply, even if we do get a lot more detail, we will be, unless there are mitigations, there are going to be cost rises. And remember, what we're hearing, not just from retailers, but across business, is a lot of people are looking for that detail, not to see how they will trade, but whether or not it will be profitable and viable for them to trade after the 1st of January 2021.
So I can probably answer this next question myself, but how are businesses feeling about having a firm deadline for all of these new arrangements to work from the 1st of January?
Well, we said at the start of the year that it was going to be a Herculean task to have everything ready. It's only got harder since then. I think the fact that the HMRC and the Westminster government are pushing this GVMS, which is a completely new system, which won't be road tested until November, which only gives us then 6 weeks, 20-something working days to get everything, you know, up and ready. You got to remember, Northern Ireland doesn't have that phased transition the same as Great Britain does. Day one, the protocol is in effect. So how we're feeling is a little bit in the dark, very concerned, quite worried. Some people are worried about viability. Some people are worried about their cost base. Some people are worried about their supply chains. And you know what? You can always tell when retailers are worried by the amount that they actually engage. And I think it's a testament to William's hard work and also the amount of information he's able to supply that, you know, we're having over 80, 90 retailers on calls because they want this information. It's the same with the Northern Ireland Retail Consortium contact groups where, you know, where we would have had 10, 12 people, we're now having 30, 40 people because people are hungry for information. They're hungry for certainty. They're also hungry to see how they can change and implement what they need to do. They can't do that until we get the detail. They can't get the detail until we have a final settlement. And that's the space that we need to get into.
Great. And on that note, I think we're going to end the discussion here. So thank you very much, guys, for joining us. Thank you to you, William.
Thank you. Hungry for lunch now.
Same here. And thanks to you too, Aidan.
No, you're very welcome. And can I just say I'm hungry all the time. So lunch, dinner, whatever it is, it's all the same to me.
So there is obviously a lot happening. And to keep up with it all, you can visit the BRC at brc.org.uk and also join us on the next edition of this podcast in a couple of weeks. So from all of us here, it's goodbye for now.